Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Chip Witt, the head of product strategy at a leading cybersecurity firm known as SpyCloud Incorporated. They're based in Austin, Texas. Chip, thanks for helping. Let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. We looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very rich and historical background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career, please?
Well, I've actually had quite a diverse career. I started off actually as a practitioner. I was a network and systems administrator. I did a stint as a bioinformatics engineer. Wound up getting into security a little bit later in my career after having gone the route of becoming a de facto CIO. And so the path to security, really, I got interested in it because it was such a misunderstood or ununderstood fact of IT. And it was increasingly important in most organizations that I had worked in up to that point. So I started my cybersecurity and security career getting involved with antivirus, which is a good place to start. I actually went to work for a company called Webroot. Did endpoint security solutions, and then also did some really interesting network security solutions. So I really got interested in the field from there. I did some additional consulting work, and ultimately wound up getting involved as a co-founder for a company that did cloud-based security in a very unique way. It was called CloudStead, and basically we built compartmentalized spaces for people to build organizations that were secure and locked down to where they were the only ones that had access. It was an interesting idea that was a little either ahead or behind its time. I'm not sure which at this point. From there, went to Hewlett-Packard, and worked at Hewlett-Packard, managing as a product manager their one of their very first threat intelligence platforms. And we built up an interesting business underneath the security research practice there. Very interesting stuff. After leaving there, I went to a mobile security company called AppThority. AppThority, if you don't know, they're really a leader in doing app analysis. And so got really interested in the mobile space. Ultimately, AppThority was acquired by Symantec. And along the way, I wound up reconnecting with some of my HPE friends at SpyCloud.
Okay, sounds excellent. Now, obviously, you just mentioned you got a SpyCloud. Now, is this a company that you helped create? Do you own this company, or can you tell us more about that?
So I am not one of the co-founders. I am very close with several of the co-founders. My stint at HPE, I was hired by a man named Ted Ross, whose name you may be familiar with as the CEO of SpyCloud. He's also one of the co-founders. And he and I developed a relationship, and probably somewhere towards the end of my time at HP, maybe early days in AppThority, I was at a Black Hat conference, and he introduced me to Dave Endler and Alan Puzik, who would become his co-founding partners. And really liked those guys, liked what they were about. They had a lot of really good experience. And so I tracked the company once they launched it, and they did some really interesting stuff early on, as I'm sure you're aware, and the rest is history. I just tracked them until they were willing to hire me.
That sounds excellent. It's kind of the way it really goes, right? Now, yep. Obviously the name of the company has some significance to it. Is there a deeper meaning behind it in terms of cybersecurity? Are you trying to like be the good guy for the innocent victims on the cloud, or?
So I'm going to tell you my interpretation of the name and a little story behind it. So I actually asked that same question, and nobody would give me a straight answer. So I don't know if the name actually had any real deep meaning behind it. I do know that it sounds cool. And it conveys a sense of something that's important. And so what it means to me, my interpretation of the name, the way in which we actually uncover stolen credentials in the underground, we actually do so through what's called human intelligence, or HUMINT. And what that involves is actually operating in and among the cyber criminal and using social engineering techniques and other tradecraft to get access to information that's already been stolen ahead of when they're willing to post it and share it with the broader world more publicly. So when I think of SpyCloud, that's what I think of. I see us actually using that human intelligence tradecraft, infiltrating that spy cloud and using that information for good instead of the criminal's intent of evil.
Okay. Sounds excellent. Now, how long has SpyCloud been in business?
So the history of SpyCloud is pretty simple. We actually launched in Austin, Texas in August 2016, but we operated in stealth mode for a significant amount of time after that. It wasn't until June of 2017 that we emerged from stealth. In that time, we did some interesting stuff. So in the first few months, we had grown our database to 5 billion total assets. And in April of 2017, we won the NATO Cyber Defense Innovation Award, which for a small company, that's pretty stellar. That's you know, we walked onto the floor as literally a no name. Nobody knew who we were. We hadn't emerged from stealth yet. And the guys did demos and showcased the product and walked away with that Cyber Defense Innovation Award, which is just huge. After we emerged from stealth in that August in 2017, we signed our 50th customer, which is also really unusual for a small company that's just getting their legs on to actually have 50 signed customers that are, you know, some of the best names in the world, including Cisco and a few others that you know, Fortune 500 companies were involved in this mix of 50 customers. So we got the wind in the sail fairly quickly. In September of 2017, we won Best of Show at Finovate. Again, unheard of for a small company walking onto a floor, showcasing a product and impressing people, not only with the depth of the technology that SpyCloud has to offer, but also in our means to operationalize that data. It becomes actionable intelligence in an organization rather than just being another threat feed, which is absolutely imperative if you're going to be successful in the security industry these days.
Right. Yeah, my congratulations on those two awards. I mean, they're like huge landmarks, I'm sure.
Yep, definitely. They definitely set the pace, set the tone.
Well, yeah, that's great. Now, does SpyCloud have a presence in other countries as well, or you're just locally based here in the United States?
So we do have customers all over the world. So we actually do a lot of work. Obviously, privacy and security is important for a lot of organizations in the European Union. So we actually work with a lot of companies there. So we have companies that are customers all over.
Okay. Now, whom is your typical customer base? Are you trying to target when you feel like you're existing and new prospects? Are they the small, medium-sized businesses? The mom-and-pop stores, the like Fortune 500, or perhaps like a mixture of these kinds of companies?
Well, what we found is everybody can use what we're actually providing to the market. So everybody runs the risk of account takeover in their organization. And so if you don't know what account takeover is, it's essentially somebody getting hold of credentials from breaches or other sources, and then leveraging those to log on to accounts to either access information or move money around or do other bad things. So credentials are one of those things, like credit cards. Credit card numbers are things that are for sale and available on the market and are used by cyber criminals to perpetrate other crimes. So everybody can benefit from this, because if you think about it, whether you're a mom and pop store or you're a big Fortune 500 running an e-commerce site, you have some fear that somebody's going to misuse the accounts that you use for giving your employees or your customers access to your company. And so that misuse creates an additional risk that you then need to figure out how to mitigate. So we have three license types. And so when you look at our product, there are three fundamental ways that you can purchase the product. The first is a license for enterprise to protect their employees. And what this does is it allows them to check against their email domains and even personal email addresses of their key business stakeholders. So think about your executive staff, your critical staff, your board members, et cetera. Not only do they have enterprise email addresses, they also have personal email addresses that, that provide a footprint or potential risk from credential theft standpoint. So we provide a mechanism for enterprises to protect themselves in that regard and get reports on new breaches that occur out in the wild so that they can proactively protect themselves, have their users change passwords, and make sure that those passwords aren't in use in their enterprise. So one of the ways that we do that, we also have a tool that goes along with that enterprise license that we sell called Active Directory Guardian. What this tool does is it plugs into the Active Directory infrastructure and will take this list of exposed credentials from third-party breaches and will match it up against active users in your Active Directory and look for exact matches of those exposed passwords. And if they find the exact matches of those passwords, force a password reset for that user so that that risk goes away. So that's one license type. The second license type that we provide for is what we call a service provider license. What this is an API access to our full database to do checks against email addresses in your authentication database. So if you're a booking.com, for instance, what the deal is there is your biggest risk is people logging into your site and booking reservations using people's credit cards without their knowledge. So if you can, when somebody logs in, they can start a session. But while that session is starting, you can actually do a check to see if that username password combination has been stolen. It's been exposed in a breach. You can then interrupt the user's session and force them down an alternate security path. So you can force two-factor authentication or ask security questions, et cetera. And that basically gives you a means to protect the accounts with minimum friction. Friction is the enemy in e-commerce because if you force people to change their passwords or alert them to security risk, sometimes they will not like that so much, and they'll go to other sites or it'll stop their transactions, and that's not what people want. But they do want a way to protect, and so that's one tool that they can use to do that. The third license type is actually one of the more exciting ones for fraud investigators, law enforcement, and others. They can use our database and some additional information that we add to our primary database to do investigations. So we have several use cases around that. The first and most obvious is the cyber criminal attribution. And basically in an investigation that we like to talk a little bit about is the Silk Road investigation. You probably are familiar with this. A guy named Ross Ulbricht is actually still in prison for actually the creation and operation of the Silk Road. And what we actually show in our demonstration is we talk about the book that was written on that. It talks about an IRS agent that had this epiphany that if the first mentions of the Silk Road could be traced, we may find the perpetrator that actually started the site. And they had some email addresses that they had subpoenaed from these web forums that were email addresses of the people that made those first mentions of the Silk Road. And one among them was Ross Ulbricht's email address, rossulbricht@gmail.com. And so what we can do with our investigation tool is definitively link that email address to two records that associate him with PHP and Bitcoin, two of the criteria that they had failed previously to find him associated with. He didn't look like a tech guy, didn't look like somebody that had any knowledge there, but by virtue of the records in which his email address and password were leaked, we were able to say definitively, he's got PHP, he's got Bitcoin. So we actually show this demonstration where if they had access to SpyCloud data, you could actually run those associations and password use, password reuse, all of that to ground to actually directly connect him to the Dread Pirate Roberts email addresses that he was using to operate Silk Road. So some pretty interesting stuff. From an investigation standpoint, that's pretty exciting. But we can also do other sorts of things around that make it really kind of useful. There are all sorts of things for using IP addresses finding related email addresses in business email compromise fraud investigations. mapping out exposure to an organization by identifying public infrastructure and mapping exposed credentials to identify personal and work email addresses, all sorts of different use cases around that investigations piece that, that make it really compelling and really interesting. So that's the third license and third way we sell. So as you can tell, it isn't just about market size where we sell, it's about organization need and a focus on security. So obviously the more mature an organization is, the more likely they are to actually be using advanced tools in these various areas to address threat.
Okay. That sounds excellent. Now, that kind of segues into my next question is, like, you have a whole host of other services. Like, you mentioned a few, like, there's some others, I think, like Active Directory integration, like Credential Explorer alerts, your API and your Intel services. Can you elaborate a little bit more if there are any other services that you just said didn't, that are still out there that you'd like to touch more upon?
Sure. So in broad strokes, what we are talking about is account takeover, and so account takeover prevention. So I mentioned, I think, the Active Directory integration. So the Active Directory Guardian is a tool that we actually, you can deploy on a workstation that will run against your Active Directory to find exposed credentials matches in your Active Directory. We also have some interesting stuff around credential exposure alerts. So that with the enterprise protection, we actually do something that's kind of nice, is we actually provide email notification of any new breaches. So if you're a company using our services, you're actually monitoring several domains or one domain, maybe some email addresses, et cetera. Anytime one of those, what we call identifiers, shows up in a new breach, you are immediately notified. And you're given access to that information so that then you can figure out what the best steps for remediation are. We also can do things like you can leverage a webhook, which is where you actually put a listener on your servers that listen for an update from our server with those new breach records, and that can prompt automation on your end leveraging our APIs. So that's pretty neat stuff. We also have some other types of integrations for notification as well that make it a little bit easier. So Slack integration is a good example there for getting those notifications when and where they're needed as a risk pops up on the radar. We also have some interesting burgeoning around NIST password screening. So we have capabilities to leverage the NIST recommendations, including looking up against exposed credentials, obviously, because that's what we do, to check a password to see if it is valid and secure. So that, and something that, you know, when users are changing their passwords, that's often the concern, is that just because you're having a user change their password doesn't necessarily mean that they're following best practices. I mean, you can force complexity and do some other remedial things there within most systems, but you can't guarantee that they aren't just adding pseudo complication to a password that maybe has already been exposed.
Sure.
We also have several APIs. We have several application programming interfaces for our services that allow our customers to programmatically write their own code to interface with our data so that they can then integrate it with other tools in their security toolkit or put the information into support processes, et cetera.
Okay. Oh, sounds excellent. Now, how large is Spy Cloud, both from a revenue and customer-wide standpoint?
I can't share financial information, but I can say that as far as employees, we're less than 50 employees right now, we're doing quite well. We're doing quite well, I'll say that.
Sounds excellent. Now, how do you obtain the data for your Intel services? Do you make use of any feeds, or how does that work?
So that's actually one of the more common questions that we get when we're actually talking with customers, is how do you get this information? So as I mentioned earlier, we use Tradecraft, we use human intelligence. And what that basically means is we have security researchers that specialize in infiltrating cyber criminal networks and gathering information from that cyber criminal circle ahead of when that information is usually released. We have a really neat slide that we actually show to customers when we're talking to them that articulates the life cycle of account takeover. And essentially where it starts is you have a server or a service that has some sort of a vulnerability that is exploitable. And you have people that write toolkits and all sorts of different stuff to basically operationalize the exposure of that to get information out of that service. So that hack essentially gets sold to a cyber criminal. Cyber criminal then picks a target and uses that hack to perpetrate a crime of data theft from that organization. And that can include anything from usernames and passwords, any PII, personally identifying information, can be part of that theft. And that's typically what happens when that criminal steals that information is they have a circle of friends that they trust. Either they're part of a hacking group or they have a close-knit social circle that they all specialize in different things as far as how they get that information out and marketable and make use of it. And so they usually will share within that tight circle early on. And then as it kind of goes along, they'll try to monetize that theft, and ultimately they'll put it into combo lists. It'll show up on paste bin sites. It'll become what's called public knowledge, at least in the deep and dark web. And then that's when, you know, different tools can get access to it. You have a lot of competitors to SpyCloud operate in the space where they get the data from the deep and dark web and make use of it, plug it into tools for behavior-based analysis and other sorts of mechanisms for protecting users against the use of this data. Where we operate is much, much closer. So that tight group, circle of the friends for that cyber criminal, we actually operate personas that get into that circle. And by virtue of social engineering, we actually get that information for free earlier in that life cycle than just about anybody else.
Sounds excellent.
Does that make sense?
Now, how do you make sure that the data that you collect is good? In other words, how do you make sure it's not phony, and how do you cleanse it?
So, yeah, we have an extensive process of automation where we actually go through, we do some data verification, and a lot of it's looking at where the information came from, can it be correlated with other information. We do a lot of deduplication, as you can imagine, and a lot of data normalization. But we have an extensive automated process that does that to make sure that the data that we're actually feeding into our database is clean and actionable intel.
Can you give any specific examples of data sets that you actually collect, or that's more proprietary information to your company?
So, it varies. So different types of breaches result in different types of information. So we actually specialized very early in credentials because that was an area that was actually not very well serviced by much of the existing security market, and it's actionable. So if you know that a username and password has been exposed and you can tie that to a user in your organization or a customer to your organization, you can take action to make sure that that password isn't in use in your organization, thus protecting you. So that's where we focused. But by that same turn, we actually collect a lot of information that is much more broad than that, that is useful to a lot of our customers. So a breach could be could contain things like, you know, personally identifying information. One of the more recent breaches this late last year was a marketing service that we have all sorts of interesting marketing data in our system. So things that may not on the surface seem very dangerous could be combined with other information that then becomes useful to do targeted phishing attacks or other sorts of crimes that are much more specific and much harder to detect. So examples of some of this information include, like, you know, did you buy a home in the last 5 years? Do you have a dog? So really detailed, fine details that marketing companies use to sell you things online. Any of those companies get breached and that data gets out there, those fine details that are essentially a map of your buying experience. If you think about when you go and buy something online, who the demographic that gift or product was for, how much you spent on it, all of that speaks to kind of assumptions that can be made about you. And so if a database has that information in it, it can be quite useful. So to shorten that up just a little bit, it can vary greatly in terms of what's available to you from the database.
Okay. Are there any types of data that you don't collect? Because there's, I mean, obviously there's a lot of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we do not store full Social Security numbers. We do not store full credit card numbers. But there's information that's sensitive that we don't want to be responsible for. So obviously things that are very dangerous, we don't like to keep. The liability of doing that is too dangerous.
Sure. Now, back to your SpyCloud API, can that be integrated into like critical infrastructure and industrial control systems? Because there's a lot of fear now in the cybersecurity landscape that these legacy systems could be the next target for the cyber attacker. Can your API be used there as well?
Yeah, our API is very flexible. I've been doing what I do for a very, very long time. And this is actually the most impressively documented and well-thought API or API set. We actually have several APIs that I've ever seen. And so I'm very proud of that. We actually use a service for our documentation that not only provides the documentation, but allows us to provide our customers with detailed examples of how to use the parameters, different examples of code snippets in different languages that they can then use to stub their code to write those integrations. And then we actually have interactive endpoints in the documentation. So you can actually exercise the API directly through the documentation, which is very, very cool. If you think about the struggles of writing code against a product, usually that comes from the inability to really experiment and have thorough documentation to really help you along the way. And we really nailed that. So I'm horribly proud of that. So the answer is yes, it can be integrated into any system that relies on authentication as a means of access. Our APIs are geared towards, again, credential related uses. So we have customers that are integrating into their authentication system directly to do direct match checks against passwords that have been exposed to see what's in their database, if it matches, and they can actually remediate. And so that's, you're 100% right. Legacy systems have the least amount of protections around them. So if they require authentication to get in, they're obviously at risk. So figuring out how to protect those things is a good thing. Same with web apps,
right?
Though web apps are the, you know, tip of the spear, right? As far as, you know, e-commerce, et cetera. And so that's where most of our customers are protecting their organizations. Web apps is leveraging the SpyCloud databases to do that. And of course, the API is the mechanism that they use to do that.
Right, a lot of people thinking that these ICS is, you know, the air gap, they think they're secure, but it's actually quite the contrary. You know?
Right.
Now, you have some really impressive statistics on your website. Have you done any work with the dark web and like the Amazon AWS S3 buckets?
So we've actually, we've got a lot of stats around what we see out there. Of course, our own stats with our data. We have a tremendous number of assets, just to kind of give you a flavor of what we actually have in our system. We have over 48 billion total assets in our system today. 11.8 billion of those are credentials. And 8.9% of those have plain text passwords. So from an actionability standpoint, that's pretty cool. So you asked about Amazon and S3. We actually do have some services that we offer to our larger customers that need it, that provides access to S3 buckets to actually their encrypted, our encrypted database made available to those customers. Is that what you were referring to?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Now, do you have any customer success stories you can share with us, like any client testimonials or any successful deployments that you'd like to make aware to the public?
I always like to refrain from talking about specific customers by name, but I can give you some really exciting use cases.
Sure.
So we have one of our biggest enterprise customers. They actually have everything configured for their identifiers, so they're monitoring their domains and key personnel's email addresses, and they use that information to hit our API, pull that information into their customer support processes so that they can then tier notifications. So they have email addresses that are assigned to not only their internal employees, but to contractors, to their partners. Anybody that's associated with the organization can get an email address on their email domain. So when we actually provide them notification of new breaches, they then trickle these into the system like a giant pachinko playing a board. They get slotted into the right hole based on who that email address represents. And then for their executive VPs, for instance, they have kind of a white glove concierge type service where they actually will reach out directly to that executive, walk them through what the information means, and help them along the way to changing their passwords. To some of their contractors, they'll just notify them. They have several properties that they manage as part of prior acquisitions, and so they feed those into their support processes. So it's a very convoluted and complex process, but at the end of the day, access to the data is something that they wouldn't have had otherwise, and it feeds this process that helps them not only mitigate risk by having people change their passwords. It's actually serving an education process. So they're actually educating their users about password reuse, complex passwords, using password managers. So our platform is not only helping them protect their organization in a very practical way, it's helping in a little less direct way in terms of providing them a platform on which to really articulate the importance of better security to their users, which is huge. That's amazing. That's the ultimate goal, is for people to be more informed. We have another customer that is a big online presence. It's a big company, big name, and they leverage us to protect their customers. So when people log into their site, they will actually, I think I mentioned them earlier, booking.com. When people log into their site, they actually protect the login from misuse by looking it up against stolen credentials. And if they find that there's an exact match to that credentials that just logged in with something that's been exposed, they'll route that user through an alternate path for, you know, changing verifying that they are who they say they are, answering security questions, doing two-factor authentication, et cetera. And then we have several organizations that are leveraging us from an anti-fraud perspective. We actually had one customer that leveraged our investigations license that was really kind of interesting. They started getting alerts looked like account takeover with credentials that were obviously stolen, obviously on the net, and, you know, we had the information. They used our investigation tool to trace the attack and the emails associated with the attack to verify that it was a risk that they had already dealt with. So rather than being a new risk, which is what it looked like a new attack, it was something that was based on old information that they had already remediated in their organization. So it was a really interesting case from a standpoint of, and proving that they had this glaring hole, it actually proved that they had already closed the hole that was being attempted to be used, which, you know, pretty neat stuff. That's three decent examples, and I have similar ones. I could probably talk all day. As part of my role as head of product strategy, I manage our customer success efforts, so I'm very intimate with just about every customer story out there.
Okay. Well, maybe we could make that into like a part two podcast here if you'd like. So now, have you done any work with ransomware, business email compromise, and other kind of like related phishing attacks or?
So we actually, I mentioned that the BEC, the business email compromise attacks, we have been used to fuel investigations around that with our investigations license. So that's a huge piece of that is, you know, being able to track that effort back to the criminal that's actually perpetrating the crime. And criminals are no better than any of the rest of us in terms of very frequently they will reuse passwords, and that's you know, one of the stats that we actually hold on to and talk about is that on average, I think millennials have, I think, somewhere around 8 passwords. Generations slightly older have 12 to 15 passwords that they rotate. So they reuse those passwords. They find something that's good, it meets complexity rules, they can remember it, and they'll rotate it and reuse it over and over and over again. Criminals are exactly the same way. And they will reuse passwords, or they'll add to a digit to the end of a really good password to reuse it. So being able to leverage that information in an investigation case for BEC is really useful because, you know, usually the email addresses that are used to send phishing emails are related to one another in some way. They share a common set of words, or the names are similar. And so you can find those patterns in the data using our investigations tools. Pretty interesting stuff.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, have you done any work with data leakage? Because, you know, that's a big fear coming up. You know, we've heard so many stories, you know, of data being accidentally leaked out by a third-party vendor, by the company itself. They don't really mean to, but, you know, like an employee was negligent. Have you done any work with that kind of thing? Or?
Well, I mean, any time that sort of thing occurs and results in a breach, we are likely to come across that data and be able to protect our customers. One of the things that I have not mentioned that's pretty important, so by virtue of how we work and that human intelligence work that I mentioned earlier where we uncover these breaches that occur, we actually work very closely with law enforcement and do responsible disclosure to breached organizations. So we're not only providing this data for organizations to protect themselves against the account takeover risk, by virtue of the responsible disclosures, we're helping organizations recognize those breaches much, much earlier than they might otherwise. I read a stat in a recent study, and it said that the percentage of organizations that are actually able to detect breaches of their organization on their own is frighteningly small. Majority of organizations that know about a breach know about it because a third party told them. And so that's one of the things that we do, we take very seriously. And again, we work very closely with law enforcement all over the world. So we are often involved in the investigations that ultimately bring the cyber criminal to justice. So that's an important aspect of what we do as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, this is not one of the questions I sent to you, but I just want to ask another one. We all are hearing about the Internet of Things or the IoT and all this interconnectedness. Have you done any work with IoT? I mean, has SpyCloud done anything with it? Or what have you come across with IoT in general?
So IoT other sorts of specific technologies, if they have authentication at their core, SpyCloud could be useful to protect them. The credential theft aspect of that is where we focus. So we don't work specifically in that area of IoT, but it's possible that if you have to authenticate into a system managing IoT devices, that's protected by credentials that could potentially be stolen if somebody's reusing a password. And so that's where we would come in, is we actually help you protect that credential theft, know that exposure happened, and if it's being used anywhere in your organization, be it to protect your web infrastructure, e-commerce infrastructure, or your IoT infrastructure, that we can help you mitigate that risk by giving you knowledge.
Now, let's segue back to the company in general. Now, we know that there are lots of cybersecurity vendors out there. Why should a customer come to you and say, hey, Chip, I want your services versus the other companies that are out there? What makes you different, that one thing that really makes you stand out of the crowd of the other vendors out there?
Well, the way in which we acquire data is unique to the industry. We're getting the information earlier. We're also getting larger sets of information than most other companies out there. And it's not just the human intelligence aspect of this, although that's a very important part. We also have a fair amount of automation that's going out and gathering information from sources that are available but are not widely used for this sort of data. So we're adding, at the low end, we're adding over 1 million records a week to our database. So our database is growing. Obviously, breaches are occurring on a more frequent basis. They actually called 2018 the year of the breach in a recent report that I read. And that's, you know, that's telling, right? So that means that people are actually out there perpetrating crimes, stealing information. So we continue to be at the ground level there, gathering that information and protecting companies earlier than they might otherwise be. And that's pretty important stuff. So I think that that's unique. But I could go a little bit more ethereal on this and say that, you know, information is great, but how you actually deliver that information is just as important. Our information, we take great efforts to make sure that it's actionable. We have a committed group of professionals that have been on this in this rodeo a time or two before, so have a lot of experience that we brought to the table in terms of how to leverage difficult information in meaningful ways that are actually actionable. You can actually plug them in operationally and actually get results. And that's really, I think, a foundation of SpyCloud and what we're providing is it isn't just about the data. The data is phenomenal, so don't get me wrong. But the way in which we're delivering it to customers is extremely unique.
Now, when you reach out to these onboarding customers, do you have any like a free trial or any free risk assessments that you offer first?
Yes. So let's just say you're interested in this and you want to just look and see how you can protect your personal email. We actually offer a free trial. If you go to www.spycloud.com, there's a try for free button in the upper right-hand corner that you can click on. You can put in your personal email address there, and it will actually help you set up an account. You'll get an email from us to finalize the configuration to set a password, and then you can access your records for your email address. And actually, that service, that free service, you can monitor up to 5 email addresses for complete free. So you can get a taste.
Yeah.
Now, if you're an organization that is interested, you can actually convert that free trial, or you can start something specific for your organization that's a proof of concept. We can actually work with you to set up your organization to do monitoring for a finite period of time, and then after that, figure out if you want to buy one of our subscriptions. And so our subscriptions, when we actually talk with customers for value and price, most people nod their heads in great agreement that we're actually really well priced for what we're providing. We provide highly granular pricing, so we don't try to gouge the little guy, but we also make sure that the bigger organizations that are getting the most benefit based on the number of employees or customers that they're protecting are paying their fair share. So we have a lot of granularity in between our highest and lowest prices.
Excellent. Now, do you have like a VAR partner or strategic seller program to help with your sales efforts?
We have a combination of programs. We do have some partners that we work with abroad, so outside of the United States. And we also have a program for channel here in the States as well that's growing as well. But we still do direct in addition to that. So we have a lot of flexibility. So if you're an organization that has specific requirements for going through a VAR, we can certainly work with you on that.
Okay. What are your general plans for expansion? Do you plan to offer new products or services or perhaps a new market or maybe a combination of both?
You'll continue to see a combination of both. We have a lot of interesting ideas on the forefront. Of course, at the base of that is iteration on tools that we already have in market. We get a lot of good customer feedback on our products, and again, you know, I'm involved directly in product strategy and customer success, and so I can tell you that we take our customers incredibly seriously. So a lot of our products today, like Active Directory Guardian, wouldn't be anywhere near where they are today without the input and direct involvement of our customers. So we definitely let our customers help guide the products and services that we offer and how we deliver those, and we're pretty serious about that. But we do have some exciting things in the hopper for 2019, so we're really excited about this year. I think that this is going to be a fun year from the standpoint of new products and new product development, but I'm not going to give away the store just yet.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll keep that for another podcast. How about that? So I got you coming back twice now for your customer
stories.
There you go. About that. Yeah. Sounds excellent. Now, I mean, the cyber threat landscape is changing like on almost like on a minute-by-minute basis. It's more like a cat-and-mouse game. How does SpyCloud keep up with all this?
Well, it's a matter of, again, understanding the market, understanding the need. What are customers being faced with in terms of challenge around security, and how best can we address that? So staying ahead of the criminal is always the challenge in security. And there's also, you know, things that are happening. People are starting to talk about passwordless login. Well, what does that mean? And what are the risks that are going to be associated with that? So we keep our ear to the ground, not only from the standpoint of market developments and customer need, but also in listening to the criminals that we're actually interfacing with on the human intelligence side, is understanding how their attacks are changing, how their approaches are changing, and figuring out new and innovative ways to address that.
Okay. Now, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing, and like, what do you think is going to be the biggest cyber threat out there in 2019?
You know, I think with the theft of increasingly personal information, I think that we're going to start to see more targeted attacks. And actually, if you are a subscriber to any of the BEC email lists, you will know that this is quite true, is that phishing attacks are already becoming increasingly complicated or complex. It's becoming far more difficult for somebody that is a victim of a BEC email phishing campaign to discern that it isn't a legitimate site. And a lot of this has to do with them just getting better technologies and better capabilities on the criminal side to actually perpetrate these crimes. But other aspects of that are, you know, more personal information. Really interesting example is that I am a member of a car club, part of the Porsche Club of America, and we've actually started to see email phishing campaigns that appear to be coming from a club officer requesting money transfers. And if someone isn't diligent in understanding, you know, that isn't actually coming from that individual, they could click on a link and transfer information to somebody that they weren't intending to, whether that's information, funds, or other sorts of you know, intellectual property. Very, very important for people to be diligent about that, but it's becoming increasingly difficult. So I think that's where a lot of this is going, is that, you know, account takeover is only part of the picture. Once you can take over an account, say an email account, and you can log in as that user, you can perpetrate all sorts of crimes that become increasingly targeted to a set of stakeholders. So that's why the marketing data and other sorts of very specific PII become increasingly dangerous from the standpoint of knowing where people's soft spots are, what they're expecting, how they live their lives to perpetrate those crimes.
Okay. Now, we'll say the best for last as we conclude here. And I keep getting asked this question. What do you recommend for people to protect themselves from cyber attacks? I mean, being an expert yourself, what are like the top three to tell the average American and how to protect themselves from being a victim?
Well, I can only really speak from the perspective of what we do at SpyCloud and say that the biggest things that you can do to protect yourself is to be aware. So, you know, if you're getting emails that you're not expecting, you want to actually, you know, be very, very careful about what you do with that information. Don't click links in an email that's unexpected from someone. Don't open attachments that you're not expecting from someone. Trust but verify. And that's one of the big things, is just better user awareness. If you're a user that, you know, you have lots of login places that you use credentials to log in, don't use the same password everywhere. Use a distinct and unique password for every place that you log in. And people might think, well, that's really hard. That's complex. Well, yeah, it is. You also need to look at, you know, the length of your passwords. You don't want simple passwords, simple words. You know, most places will have some complexity rules around the passwords that you choose, but not all of them do, and not all of them are really good. So pick passwords that are at least 12 characters in length. So make it difficult on the criminal if they get an encrypted password to decrypt that password. The best way to do that is to use a password manager. Leverage password managers that are several. Yes, there's several password managers out there. Dashlane is a good one. There's Keeper. There are several really good ones that are out there that provide an easy mechanism for you to not only set your passwords, but to maintain them over time, make sure that you don't have duplicates out there of the services you're logging into. And then it becomes, you know, remembering a passphrase for accessing your password manager is all you have to keep in your head. The system accesses your passwords and uses those. So that's a key part of protecting yourself, is to make sure that you're protecting your passwords and choosing good ones and not reusing them.
Okay. Sounds excellent. Chip, thanks for your time, and have a good weekend. We look forward to speaking with you again here in the near future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You too.